Thank you, Tanya. Let me share a couple of slides before I start. And let's make sure the technology is working properly. You should be seeing my screen at this moment, right?
We're all set.
All right.
Thank you.
So, Tanya, thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Luis Alberola. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for taking the time to having this discussion and on operating model activation, actually on accelerating the activation of an operating model. Before I start, Marcia, thank you again for being a thought partner and, you know, reading through my post and giving me some feedback was really interesting. And it helped a lot, like actually better understand the experience that I've had in operating model design and activation. What I'd like to do with this group today is, first, I'll give you a few minutes about me so you know what my perspective on designing and activating operating models is. I'll then share three examples of work I've done and in which I found some problems that I had to deal with when activating a new org. And that got me thinking about something that I've called operating model infrastructure, probably for lack of a better word, and which are technology, talent, and leadership. And after that, I'll try to get a bit more in detail of what I think those are and why they're useful. I think they're useful for activating an operating model. Then we'll go in through five breakout groups. Marcia and myself, we prepare some questions for you, and we hope the questions are relevant, and we're actually looking forward to your thoughts and insights on those. And then we'll have a closing discussion after the end of the breakout groups. So that's the intro, so let's go. About me. As I was saying at the beginning, I'm a Spaniard originally, then I became French, and then Canadian. I've lived a bit all over Asia, North America, and Europe. And then I've worked at a number of companies, and I haven't only done operating model work. I think I've developed what I know about strategy mostly at McKinsey. Talent would be at Conferry, technology would be at Accenture. You get the picture. So I have a broad experience, and I'm probably more of a transformation person than an operating model expert, but I do a lot of it. I love it. And my thinking is that anytime you go into transformation, you should be actually dealing with the operating model, at least understanding it, and more often than not, adapting it and changing it. But it's usually very complicated. Let's say you go into agile transformation, it's very complicated for the client to actually listen to you if you want to say something about the operating model. Anyway, a large perspective on transformation and maybe a deeper one on operating model design and activation. What I'm going to say today grew out of frustration, actually, frustration with activating an operating model. In my experience, I don't know about you, but in my experience, the design, at the end of the day, it's not very complicated. I mean, it's a process. It can become complex. You can have very tough problems to solve, but it's a well-known process. We have different methodologies and frameworks and approaches. At the end of the day, you get to a result. Activation, though, so putting that operating model into the real life, into the organization, it's a bit more complicated. That's what I found very often. And for a number of reasons, which I am going to talk with you about today. When you look at, well, obviously, I've had this problem. I guess most people have. And when you look at the literature, it basically tells you two things. First is that transformation is complicated and most transformations do not succeed if you think that success is actually reaching the goals that you set for that transformation in the first place. The second type of statistics that I've been looking at more recently and increasingly so is around the organization becoming increasingly complex and even more so. You look at the number of topics that leadership teams are dealing with, look at technology and what it's doing to design, to detail design in an organization. I think those are the two topics that we're dealing with as practitioners. And you could argue, they could make operating model frameworks more complex. This image comes from Accenture, from one of the recent posts on operating model design. They just added data and technology to this model that you all know and that I really like, but all of a sudden the model becomes more complex. This is not what I want to speak about today. I'm more into the activation of the model. So I won't speak about the models themselves. It could be that it's a good idea to make the models more complex. What I think is more important is to recognize that the activation itself, if you want the implementation of the operating model itself, has become more complex because your scope is very large. So, aligning everyone into a new op model is pretty complicated. Whether you're doing an enterprise op model or functional op model, your scope is usually large, and aligning everyone at the same time, at the same level, is very complicated given all what that they have in their hands. You also need to align the minds of the leaders themselves, and they have competing agendas. When let's say your operating model is ready, you've aligned with your leadership team and everyone's on board, but then you need to bring in the other folks into actually making it into a reality. And business unit leaders, functional leaders, they have their own agendas, they have priorities, they have stakeholders to please, shareholders to please very often. And well, making this transformation might be or might not be their number one priority. And let me tell you, for the one that has designed the operating model, it is the number one priority. And the point is, if everyone is not on board, given how interconnected organizations are and how quick they move, it's very complicated that you're going to make it a success. So I think that's the second piece. And the third one is technology. Detailed design today is about transforming the technology infrastructure of your organization. I won't go into the details of that, but when you detail a process today, you're basically implementing a new or an existing technology. So I think activations has become really more complex today, and that's what I want to talk about. So now I'll go through three projects, three examples that I had to face with my team. Great projects. I was lucky to have those opportunities. Each of them had a different set of problems, and those are the ones where my ideas about these infrastructures came from. First one is it's around an issue, problem, organizational problem at a large life science organization that wanted to transform the operating model of its clinical department. What they wanted to do very specifically was to have a clinical organization that was consistent between their two R&D organizations, vaccine and non-vaccine. I'm not going to go into the details of this. As you might imagine, huge number of organizational issues, many stakeholders. What we faced when we were there was that apart from the consistency between clinical in two different R&D organizations, we also needed to align clinical ways of working with the larger R&D organization and with research and development programs and processes. While we were doing that, it was a lot of work. It was very interesting work. My team was also working with the leadership team of clinical, and it was working on like accelerating that leadership team, one of those leadership team development programs. Very interesting. And what we did with both teams was to use the design of the new operating model as an opportunity for the leadership team to actually change its ways of working. So basically, the change in behaviors, the change in governance models, the change in measures of the leadership team, all of a sudden focused on the design of the clinical operating model. And it was great. It was great because obviously they were engaged, obviously they were sharing great insights, and obviously it was making the team of my team of designers, it was making that work easier and I think more impactful. So that was where I started thinking about, I mean, how can you even think about activating an operating model if your leadership team is not totally engaged and totally driving it with you? Even more so, as the key problem that we faced in at this client was that even though we kind of align at the clinical leadership level, we didn't manage to do that at the larger corporate level. And it was one of the key blocks of the activation of the clinical operating model. So, number one, leadership. I guess there's some leadership infrastructure. I'll tell you a little bit more about it afterwards. And I think it deserves to be addressed at the very beginning of your design process. Number two was a project also in life sciences, quite different. New operating model, global operating model, becoming global and kind of hybrid between functional and geographical. HR had been identified as the key enabler of that operating model design, actually activation. It was very interesting. So design of the operating model was going on. Design of the functional HR operating model was going on. Vision, strategy, new operating model based on centers of excellence and then global delivery services centers and geographical teams. And then one of the decisions we made was to accelerate on one of the talent management practices. We said, okay, let's actually start, even before we're done with the design of the global operating model, let's start with performance management. It wasn't an operating model design decision. It was just, I would say, a random decision. But the fact that we started with performance management, that we were connected to the rest of the operating model work, was actually pretty important. Because, as you know, when you design an operating model, a new operating model, one of the key transformations is the concept of performance. It's going to change what performance means, how it's translated, how it's measured, how it's driven. It's going to change because the operating model is not the same, right? Even the strategy is not the same. So working on that performance management process with like a redefined performance, redefine the whole goal setting, evaluation, coaching, all the whole performance management approach, it was pretty impactful for the activation, because you could argue that operating model activation, at the end of the day, it's about changing behaviors. And performance management is a huge behavior change driver. Actually, everything talent management is a huge individual behavior change driver. And so this second project got me thinking about, well, you should definitely have all your talent management practices and your talent organization ready whenever you want to activate an operating model. Otherwise, it's going to take forever. It's going to take forever. If you're still measuring performance as defined by a previous operating model, it's very complicated that people are really going to change their behavior. So that was my second idea. And the third one, another example, this one was not in life sciences. It was a case in the financial industry, a great one. I was working for two institutions that drove regulation in a country, an American country. And regulatory was changing, like the regulation framework was changing. And to put it simply, it was moving from being focused on the type of financial institution, let's say one regulator regulating banking and the other regulator regulating non-banking. It was moving from doing that to having two regulators, one regulating from the prudential point of view, banking and non-banking, and the other regulating from the market conduct point of view, banking and not banking. As you may imagine, it was a huge change. each institution, each regulator needed to change its operating model, but they needed to swap capabilities, to swap teams. And more importantly, they needed to swap technology almost at the end of the day, because one of the key measures of success for that project was to maintain a very high level client customer experience, so financial institution experience. These two regulators needed to share the supervisory technology. That was a very big challenge. So we did our work, we did two operating models, we tried to make them consistent with one another. We tried to establish a governance of cooperation between the two regulators. And in those two operating models, technology was one of the key issues. Where to situate technology, how to differentiate between CIO and CTO, where to situate analytics, which were a scarce resource in the organization. Those were complicated topics. And when we started to deploy, to basically deploy the technology, we put together a shared center of excellence. So a shared center of excellence that would design and deploy and operate the supervisory technology. When we did that, very interesting work, what we found out is that all the design that we had made, the high-level design, like designing the CTO and designing the analytics teams in each of the two organizations, didn't really make sense. It was not the right approach, but we could only discover that when we addressed technology at its core. So that was my third learning, that it's very complicated today to do operating model design if you don't understand technology very, very detailed, in a very detailed way. So leadership, talent, technology, those are three topics that you need to address from the very beginning if you want to succeed in activation. Before I move to speaking about these three, I wanted to share another idea here, and which is, I would say, the environment of operating model work, organizational work. I think at the end of the day, what we're solving for today is complexity and speed. Those are ever increasing. It's not going to change in the foreseeable future. The authors I go to when I think about those two topics are W. Brian Arthur on complexity. He's written about the nature of technology. For anyone that's an org designer, it's a pretty scary read because it shows you the organizational power of technology and the fact that it's almost impossible to be a designer without being also a technologist today. It's beginning to become my belief. And I also go to Rosa for acceleration of the pace of time, of the pace of change. And I think those two are critical. And you know, that's basically because why I think at the end of the day, differentiating between design and activation probably worked when organizations were a bit more stable and less complex, and you could actually make decisions that were easy to cascade down. I don't think that's the case anymore today. And that's why today I feel it's a good idea to take a look at these three infrastructures, which are talent first. So what is the talent infrastructure? To me, will not come as a surprise to you. It's basically your work and career architecture and your talent practices. It's the systems that you've put in place so that people can move across the organization and deliver their work. And the talent practices that basically recruit, develop, and situate people in those different positions. So performance management, talent management, corporate universities, learning and development, and the whole talent area. That, to me, should be in place as you start to design the operating model. You should be looking at it. You should be identifying the key changes that will come, because otherwise, the activation of the operating model is going to take for a very long time. The point is that I don't believe that the old rule of thumb, which was we have 18 months to activate an operating model, I don't think it holds anymore because things go too quickly. So I think things should be in place as you design your operating model, whether it's a functional one or larger one, it should be in place. For talent, for sure. For technology also, I think. To me, technology infrastructure is basically your legacy systems, your technology debt, your key vendors, your situation in the technological ecosystem of your industry, your organization from a technology point of view. So where's your CIO, where's your CTO, how they collaborate together, how they deal with product and with work. That increasingly so is how your organization is translated at the end of the day. People go through talent infrastructure. Data goes through technology infrastructure. And you should know it very well when you're designing, because otherwise the capabilities that you're imagining, they might just be science fiction. You will never be able to actually build them, or you will not be able to build them in time, or you will not be able to make them really a competitive capability or a differentiating capability in front of your competitors. And the third one is about leadership. Even if you've managed to have all your talent practices in place, even if you've managed to have your technology infrastructure well in place, if all your leaders are not engaged and supporting, it's complicated. And when I think about leadership infrastructure, what I'm thinking about is the extended leadership infrastructure, not only the C-level leadership, but really the whole leadership of an organization, which could be very structured, around a leadership framework with behaviors, skills, capabilities, values, and practices like succession planning or hypod development. Or it could be very unofficial, networks of leaders. In any way, having all your leadership engaged, I would say even in the design of the operating model, it is critical to make sure that they are going to be aligned, empowered, and they will become owners, and they will actually drive a quick activation of the operating model, which I think is the key point. So I was trying to keep the time that was allowed to me. So that's basically all I had for you today. Obviously, there would have been questions. Please use them in the breakout groups. And we will have a discussion afterwards when you come out of the breakout group with your insights. So happy to take any question at that moment. Marcia and myself will be doing that. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you in a while after the breakout groups. And maybe, Tania, you can take over now and explain about next steps.
Okay, well, thank you, Luis. What we're going to do is each group is going to be kind of tending to one of these questions. So your breakout room is titled one of the questions that's here in general, and then I'm going to pop into the rooms and put your question into chat. So that'll just take me a few minutes. What I do love is when you jump into the rooms, we have a practice in one of our other programs that we have, our regular monthly coffee clubs, where we suggest for your introductions, keep it non-credentialed. Just share something fun about yourself, just get to know folks. And then that tends to, we find, open up the opportunity for people to engage a little more openly. And so if you would love to do that, and it'll just take me just a minute to pop into each room and give you one of this clarifying question of what they'd like for you to chat about. And then we'll reconvene and we'll look for one person from each room to share a few of the highlights out of the discussion that you had in the breakouts. So let me see here. I've had a bunch of people that are jumped off the line with the announcement that we're going to do breakout rooms. So I want to, it will take me just a second to get folks shuffled around a little bit. So we'll be just enjoy your first few minutes together.
Hello, can you please add me to a room? I mistakenly just existed from one
Oh,
room.
all right, let me put you back in.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So we're in room, differentiate. You popped the old leave the room, didn't you? Just be patient. Let me control you.
You
How are
know
you?
what? Very seldom do it, but every once in a while, I'm not thinking. I was actually talking when it came up.
Yeah.
That's why I did it. How are you, Tanya?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Yeah, just frenetically busy, but it's good busy.
Is it?
So,
That's good to hear.
you
Everybody's
know.
staying healthy and
Yeah,
that's good.
absolutely. Oh.
Good to hear. All right, Luis and Marcia, you'll want to unmute because everybody gets automatically muted when they come back in.
Yep.
Thank you.
And I'll have to share apologies. I had another quick to-do and I didn't get a 5-minute or 2-minute warning. So you all just may have got ripped back out. All right, well, I'm going to leave it to Luis and Marcia to jump in and facilitate the ahas.
Okay, well, should we just dive straight in? The start with the first whoever, I think it was group one, had the question about what are the some of the methods and techniques you've used to successfully activate an operating model. Someone from that group like to tell us what the highlights were or any particular insights you came up with?
I may jump in just because I was taking notes. So please, everybody, keep me honest if I'm not correct. But we shared several mechanisms. Diane mentioned that she uses a lot of the Impactful Organizations framework. Harris mentioned that he because this is very overwhelming for clients, they focus on the one thing that makes the biggest difference when they're driving that. Georg says that he focuses basically on three pillars in driving this the governance model on how to engage with stakeholders, the talent model that has emerging leaders, and the partner model on how to work with the strategic partners. And I mentioned the viable systems model as a mechanism to design. And during the design process, you're actually looking at the organization dynamically with all the other elements of how the information flows go through the organization. How is the resource allocation? What's the technology architecture that supports that? So it allows to have a broader view. So immediately people will have to go, the leaders will have to see the operating model, right? Like there's no way to bypass it because you're not really touching the structure. So those were it. Did I miss anything or did I misconstrue anything?
That was great. Thanks.
I think the systems point of view makes a lot of sense. I think you need to have a systemic approach right now. Otherwise, it's very complicated to not to miss something, I would say.
Great. Well, let's roll on to the second group. And their question was looking at the three infrastructures, talent, leadership, and technology. And asking what you think of them as the basis, as a sort of framework for fast and effective activation. How did this group get on? What did you discuss?
Hi, Marcia. I don't know if anyone else from our group wants to speak up. We talked at first about how much, despite the technology, how important the human aspect of this was, whether it's leadership or talent. Yes, technology is central, and without people changing their behavior, nothing happens. That was a considerable chunk of the conversation, and I had to comment as I'm on the ODF conference design committee how our conference this year, our theme is around human-centered and adaptive. And again, despite all the massive technological advances that have been made over the decades, it's still this kind of transformational change is foundationally human. And the role of technology has even shifted. One of our members, I can't remember who, said it's we've moved technology up front a little more. Things like collaboration technology and things like that may have come earlier in the process than they used to, but still there. Andrea, you were on our team, right? Did you want to add something?
I think we all agreed that in terms of activation, like we see the similarities with change management approach of needing all of these components and the importance of leadership alignment and involvement in this process. And then how, even though with the technology along the process is becoming more forefront and our business is more interested in leading with that, we still have to bring in the individual component about that and how people interact across that model, which often gets overlooked, and that's the value that we can bring in understanding how it actually is working with the people.
Yeah. And just before Lewis comments on that, Carlos, am I getting from what you were talking about there, sort of that maybe the people element is of a higher order than the technology in terms of activation, that it's perhaps more of a, or am I misreading you there?
I didn't mean to infer that or imply it,
Okay.
rather. I think they're pretty parallel, but I don't think you can do you the human element, no matter how sophisticated our technology, and of course AI has been all the buzz for the last couple of years, and as amazing as it is and continues to be, end of the day, if your leadership aren't aligned and they aren't making the shifts in their behavior and ways of working, and you're the people in your organization who are enabling this, it doesn't happen. So I think I would say, I don't know if one's ahead of the other. They feel pretty
Yeah.
equivalent to me in terms of the how important they are, but that's just my view. I'm not speaking for the group.
I think that makes a lot of sense to what I found is what's interesting is bringing technology into the heads of the leadership team more than just thinking about the technology as something else. It's really understanding the technology you're in, like the infrastructure, the ecosystem, and make be, because maybe because of the age of leadership teams, what you find is that it's not as clear when you are working with them as it is when you go and do the detailed design. And then things become a bit almost impossible, right, to implement because the capabilities that we're imagining are just not possible or too expensive or are just not differentiating enough.
Right.
I'm working currently on something Gen AI. And what we're trying to do is getting leaders to stop thinking about Gen AI and think about what's the technology revolution that we're living through. I mean, it didn't start one, as you were saying, 2 years ago. It started like 20 years ago. And if your organization is not in there, you have so many other things to do before you start spending your money on Gen AI. No, so it's really about that. It's about talent and leadership, I would say, yeah, because we do change behavior. We change the behaviors at the end of the day. So that's front and center. But technology is not, and I think it needs to be. Maybe that's the way I think about it.
Like a triangle.
What I have seen, though, if we want people to change their behavior, we have to get to like quite a granular level of what their role in technology is for actually execution, because then they won't know what to do. Just like we would describe roles and accountabilities, the technology component of their role is as critical as the overall tasks that they're accountable for. It's how you do that task if you want them to do it successfully.
Agreed. And I think that's a change.
So on the third group, we're looking at I guess historically a lot of op model and organization design was done in a way where the design was done and then you looked to activating it or implementing it or rolling it out or whatever language. And increasingly we're having to put these together and run them in parallel. And so the question this group was asked was, is there a reason to differentiate between design and activation? What came out of this group?
I'm happy to share from for our group if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks, Jane.
I think that so what we talked about is that is there a reason to separate them? The answer is that you almost can't today, and I think that that is what you just alluded to, and you're starting activation almost at the same time as you're starting the actual design phase, and that the activation starts in the leadership maybe, but then you know you broaden it out. The other thing we talked about is that it also depends on the timeline, like how much time you have, because if it's a really long timeline, like things are just changing along the way. And so even your original design objective might have shifted 6 months in, 3 months in, right? There's something happens and then you're, so it's more of an iterative process is what I took away from our discussion. Anything people from my group will would add to that?
Yeah, that's good.
Jane, to the point, may I ask a question to you and your group?
Sure.
Because, you know, like that to me, it's like the practical implication that we're facing, because the reality is that most of these leaders, they have literally no stamina. I'm going to be super hypocritical here, so please forgive me. But it's almost like, oh, I want to get to the decision and I want it implemented now. I don't want to look at the consequences. I don't want to stick to it. I don't even want to be present. I want to hand it over to someone else. So then I will consider myself like I reach the point because I reach a decision making point. So how do we get them in practice? Like in practice, how do we drive that accountability when they have the power and yet they have like this little stamina to go through the tough valleys and mountains that come ahead?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, you know, it's really about design as a marathon. It's not a sprint. Like they want sprints, right? And you tell them like, oh, we'll work in sprints, but really it's a marathon to get to the end point.
That's quite a nice segue into that. Sorry, someone.
Could I jump in? Because I think Jim said something very important. He said it was very important to get the decision made and passing it to the middle. Jim, correct me if I misinterpreted. Mm-hmm. Pass it to the middle where it gets then implemented. I hope I'm correct. I hope I didn't misinterpret that, because I thought that was quite insightful. And to a less extent, some of my experience has been there. Relying on the top C-suite never happens. You've got to give it to them occasionally and give them feedback about where you're going. That's just my view of it. They don't have the stamina, absolutely right. Or the bandwidth, maybe that's the way to put it.
Yeah, if I may.
The only expansion I would make on that is the is to be explicit. First is do not accept a mandate for organization design that includes any suggestion of how or what that future state will look like. It's specifically what outcomes do you want from the organization by what date? And the rest of it is left to the next, to the leaders at all levels to assemble the right teams to make it happen. If you can get an executive team to do that, then they know they're accepting a huge risk, because they will be forced to agree on things that they never had to before, because you're going to pose big questions to them and you're going to get answers back that are broadcasted to a wide group of leaders as the answer from the executive team. If they aren't willing to play that, I don't accept the contract, or I didn't. I'm retired pretty much now, working strictly on education and coaching, but if I couldn't get them to accept that, I was gone. I was only fired from one company for forcing them to do that, because they could not come to consensus on big questions about the future state.
Interesting. I'm mindful that we have just 5 minutes remaining, and it would be great to hear from the other two groups. The fourth group was looking at what the skills and knowledge are going to be required of OD practitioners to be able to do this parallel working between design and activation. Someone from that group? No.
Marcia, I'm actually not sure if that was our group question. It could
That's
be that
exactly what
strayed.
I was going to ask. Is that our group?
It could be that we strayed a little bit off topic in our conversation. But
your
I'm
group's
happy to
question,
share.
Just so you all know, that was the...
Thanks, Tanya. I'm happy to share maybe a couple of things that stood out to me from our conversation. One was about the skill of facilitating dialogue or engaging in dialogue to bring groups away from the kind of one-way communication. And the other takeaway for me was the ability to understand the internal perspective that, and many of us are external practitioners here, but to be able to really work with knowing what is ultimately implementable by getting into the necessary level of detail to be able to know will work for the specific situation.
Thank you. And the last group, how about whoever's going to speak for that group? You say what question.
I can. Caleb. The question is on the leadership behaviors. I forget exactly the question, but it was on the leadership role and leadership role and activation. And I brought up an example where I was an internal change agent at a big pharma company that was going through a lot of change. And one of the things I did was brought the leaders offsite when they had already started to implement what some of the changes would be, and their role in working with within the organization, there were more groups communicating and organized differently than there were before, and the information flow and who was responsible for what was changing significantly, and their behaviors needed to change because where they jumped in and made decisions was no longer going to be the case. And the culture was one that when people were uncertain, things went up and over to leadership and back down, and they enabled that culture. So understanding that what their behaviors, how their behaviors were holding back on the ability to move into this new model and what it looked like, what they would do different, how they would hold each other accountable. And it was quite a revelation for them to really see it and start to identify for themselves what they were going to do differently.
Right. I think we are coming, let's see, up to the hour. I'm going to pop in, Lewis wrote a short article that captures a lot of what he described in his earlier presentation, and we'll add that to the, I'll pop it in the chat now, but we'll add it to the material that the recording and so on that will go on to ODF's website. But I think that probably, Tanya, if just before I pass back to you, I just want to say a really big thank you to everyone who joined us today from wherever you are in the world. Thank you. It's great. And a very special thank you to Lewis for preparing all this material and all the thought that's gone into it. It's greatly appreciated. And these community conversations are about just that, triggering ideas to start the discussion going. So thank you, everybody. Tanya, is there anything that you would like to wrap up with?
Well, again, we appreciate your time preparing this and everybody's involvement. We have our usual monthly offerings and then, occasional one-off topics that'll be coming up. So we've got those scheduled for the next upcoming months. So if anybody has any questions about our virtual offerings or our upcoming conference, I will stay on the line. We are 3 weeks away from being together in Denver and looking forward to those who will be able to join us. And again, thank you very much for being here. We wish everyone a great rest of your day. I'll send a message out when we have the recordings available and posted on the website.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.